other places as well, like South Africa, to be good markets for its battle-tested weapons, weapons tested against Palestinians. Israel was also exporting advisors. It was exporting strategies. So, for example, the Guatemalan military turned to Israeli advisors in order to help devise their counterinsurgency strategy against their indigenous populations, which resulted in enormous numbers of deaths, including what has been called a genocide in the early 1980s. So in some ways, Israel has long been a junior partner to the United States when it comes to military and foreign policy. Places and moments where the United States might not want to be involved very explicitly, Israel has stepped in to supply the weapons and the advisors and the technology and the strategies that the United States might not have wanted to do for themselves.
Viet Thanh Nguyen, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Pulitzer Prize winning author, professor at the University of Southern California, his latest book, To Save and to Destroy, Writing as an Other. Also co-editor of the new book, The Cleaving, Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora. We'll link to your op-ed in the Los Angeles Times today. Americans are still learning the wrong lessons from Vietnam. Viet Thanh Nguyen is on a national book tour. He'll be here in New York, in Brooklyn, Thursday night at the Center for Fiction, and at Rizzoli Bookstore in Manhattan on Friday. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has job openings. Go to democracynow.org to learn more. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portlanders plan rallies and marches for International Workers Day on May 1st.
Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden plans to run for re-election in 2028.
And later, we'll hear the inside scoop on what to expect at Portland's Cinco de Mayo Fiesta.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 30th, 2025. I'm Sherry Meredith.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Thursday is May Day, also known as International Workers Day, and labor immigrant rights groups have a number of events and rallies planned. The Portland Association of Teachers will be rallying with other labor groups downtown at Terry Schrunk Plaza at 5:30. 5051 is organizing a workers' rights rally at the Portland State University South Park Blocks at 1 p.m. with a march planned afterward. Indivisible Cedar Mill plans to rally at Pioneer Courthouse Square at 4:30 p.m. against the mass firings of federal workers. Another rally and march for immigrant and workers' rights will be out in Sewellcrest Park at 5:30 p.m. It's organized by Portland Contra Las Deportaciones, the Portland chapter of Students for a Democratic Society, and the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Portland. Workers Tap also hosts a May Day celebration starting at 7 p.m. More rallies and events are planned for this week as well.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden will run for re-election in 2028 when his current term expires. He'll be 79 that year, and he'll be 76 on his birthday this Saturday. In an announcement today, Wyden said, quote, "My top priority is stopping Donald Trump's assault on America and taking back both the Senate and the House in 2026. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley's term runs out next year, and he has already filed for re-election. Maggie Sandstrom, a Merkley spokesperson, said, quote, "Jeff is fighting for a much better plan than Trump's. Families thrive and billionaires pay their fair share of taxes." Four current Senate Democrats, including Illinois' Dick Durbin, the second-ranking Democrat, have already announced plans to retire.
The Education Department will begin collection next month on student loans that are in default. That also includes the garnishing of wages for potentially millions of borrowers that are in default on their federal student loans. The Trump administration's announcement marks an end to a period of forbearance that began during the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2020, President Donald Trump paused federal student loan payments and interest accrual as a temporary relief measure for student borrowers. No federal student loans have been referred for collection since March of 2020. Beginning May 5th, the department will begin involuntary collections through the Treasury Department's offset program. After a 30-day notice, the department will also begin garnishing wages from borrowers. Kristen McGuire, executive director for Young Invincibles, said, quote, "Layoffs at the Federal Student Aid Office at the Education Department made it harder for students to get their questions answered, even if they wanted to pay their loans," end quote. Along with borrowers already in default, around another 4 million are 91 to 180 days late on their loan payments. Linda McMahon, Education Secretary, said, quote, "Going forward, the Department of Education, in conjunction with the Department of Treasury, will shepherd the student loan program responsibly and according to the law, which means helping borrowers return to repayment, both for the sake of their own financial health and our nation's economic outlook," end quote.
For the first time since 2022, the U.S. economy, as measured by gross domestic product, has declined. This was for the first 3 months of the year, which included 3 weeks of the Biden administration. The decline of 3% contrasts with the 2.4% increase measured in the previous quarter, October through December of 2024. On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones went down 167 points. NASDAQ went down 148 points. The report from the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis says, quote, "The decrease in real GDP in the first quarter primarily reflected an increase in imports and a decrease in government spending. The increase in imports is seen as a reaction to the impending tariffs and their effects and their expected effects on business supply chains." California Representative Ro Khanna said, "It turns out that when you launch a trade war with blanket tariffs, lay off federal workers en masse, cancel federal contracts, and reduce skilled immigration, you'll have negative GDP growth." President Trump posted, quote, "This is Biden's stock market, not Trump's. Growth will take a while. Has nothing to do with tariffs, only that he left us with bad numbers. But when the boom begins, it will look like no other." Reports came out yesterday of consumer confidence in April reaching lows not seen since early in the COVID pandemic.
A new report details the economic impact that mass deportations would have on Washington State, especially in agriculture and construction. The report found undocumented immigrants contributed nearly $1 billion in taxes to the state in 2022. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
A new report warns mass deportations of undocumented immigrants in Washington would lead to labor shortages and make many goods and services more expensive. Washington is home to 325,000 undocumented immigrants, many of whom work in agriculture, construction, and caregiving. Katie Dong with the Washington State Budget and Policy Center is co-author of the report. She says in 2022, undocumented workers paid nearly $1 billion in Washington state and local taxes, while generating nearly $150 billion a year for the state's GDP.
They take care of our children. They're our grocery store workers. They help build our homes. And so we cannot operate our day-to-day lives without immigrant workers.
Dong says at a time when Washington is facing a huge revenue shortfall, giving undocumented workers legal status would boost the state's tax revenue by $100 million a year. The Trump administration says it is following through on a campaign pledge to tighten immigration enforcement. Many of Washington's undocumented immigrants work in agriculture, and the report shows that losing just 5% of these workers would severely impact the state's food production, leading to higher prices. Dong warns that deporting undocumented workers would also put U.S.-born employees at risk, since their jobs are interdependent. For example, she says migrant farm workers often report to U.S.-born supervisors.
The more immigrant workers that we lawlessly take away from the fields, the less need there is for U.S.-born supervisors to manage their crews.
Dong warns the Trump administration's deportation policies instill fear in undocumented immigrants, their families, and even U.S. citizens, and lead to lower graduation rates.
If a parent is detained and deported, their children oftentimes will drop out of school to help support the family.
Dong says that along with granting legal status, it is in Washington's best interest financially to uplift documented communities by funding programs that provide them things like health care and unemployment benefits. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The Trump administration is taking steps to privatize the U.S. Postal Service. But a new report details how 102 million Americans who live in suburbs, small towns, and remote areas across the nation would pay the biggest price to cast ballots and receive medicines and other essential items by mail. Eric Galatis has more in Colorado.
President Donald Trump and Elon Musk have proposed privatizing the United States Postal Service by selling it off to a corporation such as Federal Express or UPS. A new Institute for Policy Studies report shows which zip codes in Colorado and across the nation would likely pay higher parcel rates to cast ballots or receive medicines and other essential items. Co-author Sarah Anderson says more than 100 million Americans in rural areas, small towns, and even suburbs on less profitable routes would take the biggest hit.
Without competition from a public service that has a mandate to provide affordable delivery to every address in America, people in these areas in particular might lose their delivery at their homes altogether.
Efforts to sell off the nation's postal service come as the Trump administration makes good on promises to reduce the size of government and programs it sees as inefficient or wasteful. Proponents of privatization have long argued that corporations do a better job at a lower cost compared with government agencies. Currently, U.S. Postal Service parcel rates are between 25 to 60% lower than rates charged by FedEx and UPS. Anderson says to keep prices down, a private company would likely use more part-time workers who would get lower wages, fewer hours, benefits, and less job security. She says the USPS has historically provided good-paying jobs in Colorado and across the country.
And doing work that really helps bind the nation together. And that was the original vision of the Postal Service. It's in our Constitution that it should help connect rural to urban areas and level the playing field.
Americans across the political spectrum have voiced strong support for the USPS and its public mission. And Anderson notes there are currently bipartisan resolutions against privatization in the U.S. House and Senate. She says she hopes the president is listening to the people in his own party,
who are speaking out in support of keeping the Postal Service public and keeping its mandate to provide universal service to every American, no matter where you live.
This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
Trump marks first 100 days of his second term. GOP leaders praise the administration's immigration agenda, and small businesses worry about the impacts of tariffs as a 90-day pause ends. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think it has been a very historic 100 days. And in my view, you could be described as promises made and promises kept. If you look across the board, all the things the president campaigned on, said he was going to do, he is following through on those.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune is one of many elected officials celebrating the first 100 days of President Donald Trump's second term. Thune says he's especially pleased by Trump's moves on immigration. Most Americans have been keen on using mass deportations against migrants, but polls also show their attitudes are changing when seeing the policy in effect. Merwil Gutierrez is a 19-year-old New Yorker awaiting asylum. His family says he's been wrongfully deported to an El Salvador supermax prison. Paz Radovic, with Documented, says Gutierrez hasn't been allowed to communicate and federal officials have been little help, which has damaged his father's faith in the American dream.
He contacted a lot of police stations and no one was able to give anything about where Mary Wills was. So that silence is what Wilmer resents the most, not just the arrest itself, but the feeling of being left in the dark.
Trump just signed an executive order targeting sanctuary cities. It gives Attorney General Pam Bondi and the Department of Homeland Security a month to identify the local governments not complying with federal immigration actions. Noncompliance could result in losing federal funding. Murata Wouda is with the New York Immigration Coalition.
This executive order is nothing more than an intimidation tactic designed to undermine the ability of local governments to enact the policies that they believe best safeguards their communities, while strong-arming localities into becoming complicit with Trump's attacks on immigrants.
Polls show Trump's approval rating for his first 100 days under 40%, the lowest since polling began, and the narrow congressional majority party shows signs of fraying, with moderate Republicans opposing drastic cuts to Medicaid. Budget hardliners have been backing an almost $900 billion cut from health care for the poor, elderly, and disabled over 10 years, but other Republicans say they won't support cuts of more than about half that size. For his part, the president insists they won't cut Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security, and congressional leaders say they will only trim fraud, waste, and abuse. Trump's dramatic and chaotic tariff policy is also sparking pushback. More than 500 Pennsylvania craft brewers are signaling import taxes on things like aluminum cans are a serious issue for them. Jeff Fegley owns Brewworks in Bethlehem and Allentown. He says the small businesses like his, which helped revitalize downtown Bethlehem after the steel industry's decline, will struggle.
I hope they can get through this because the consumer ultimately is going to pay, because we'll have to offset it somewhere. We can't absorb it all. We'll have to raise prices, and I think right now the restaurant industry as a whole is seeing kind of flat sales.
Though Trump's tariffs have been on pause, it's uncertain if they will be paused again. Speaking with reporters on Air Force One, the president said he expects to make multiple deals, but also said he won't call another 90-day pause. While he and other administration officials have claimed to be in talks with China about a trade deal, China denies the negotiations are even happening. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Laura Grimes from Oregon Arts Watch on the publication's latest stories. Then we'll take a look at the closing performance of this season of the Portland Youth Philharmonic, happening this Sunday at Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. At 6, it's Radio Zine on Class Consciousness and Class Warfare, hosted by Santiago. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 41 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be hot and sunny with a high of 81. Today in history, in 1937, the Commonwealth of the Philippines held a constitutional referendum for Filipino women on whether they should be extended the right to suffrage. Over 90% vote yes. The quote of the day is from Japanese Buddhist teacher Taisen Deshimaru, who said, quote, "To receive everything, one must open one's hands and give."
Anchorage, Alaska is hosting a boarding school a boarding school summit this week with a focus on truth and healing for those harmed by the residential school system. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. This Friday, a special event is being held in Anchorage that'll bring together former boarding school students, researchers, and others for a day of remembrance and reflection. Called Moving Beyond Boarding School Summit Towards Truth and Healing, the event will be moderated by National Native News' anchor, Antonia Gonzalez. For her, the issue strikes home.
My mom went to boarding school hundreds of miles away, having her mouth washed out with soap for speaking her Navajo language, going there and experiencing the trauma of having to cut her hair, which, you know, in Native culture is a big thing with her long, beautiful hair, and she tells stories of just how traumatic that was.
The Alaska Native Heritage Center and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, which owns National Native News, are co-hosting the event. While members of the press are welcome to attend, recording will not be allowed for a four-hour block in the afternoon.
We do have people who are going to be in attendance who are traditional healers, culture bearers, elders, so there are a lot of people there to offer support, but also to allow people space so that they can feel like they can share openly.
The boarding school era is a painful one for many Alaska Natives and Indigenous communities. Both government-run schools and those operated by churches work to remove Native culture and practices, and accounts of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse have surfaced in the years since they operated. Skin sewing or hide sewing and beadwork are vital art forms in Southeast Alaska's Tlingit culture. Rain Pavlik of Yakutat in rural Alaska is blending those art forms with contemporary style. As Alaska Public Radio's Cadence Cedars reports, Pavlik sees it as a way to resist the pressure on Indigenous artists to modernize their work.
Rain Pavlik sits on a bed next to a large collection of her latest work.
It required a lot of tedious line work.
There's a pair of jeans with sealskin flair, a woman's suit made of deerskin and seal hide, and many of the pieces include ornate beading.
Beading a straight line is really hard.
She holds up a pair of hand-sewn moccasins.
So this pair of moccasins is made with deer and moose skin.
She turns them over, revealing beadwork on the back. The letters read, "Land Back," in an old English typeface.
Which is a message for the world we live in today. And so
Pavlik says really she grew up in Yakutat, surrounded by artists. She says she first learned from her mother how to sew items like pillowcases, but few members of her family practiced skin sewing on animal hides like moose and sea otter. So Pavlik learned from her aunt.
Making moccasins really was a way to connect to my family and my ancestors.
Now Pavlik's community knows her for her beadwork and skin-sewn garments. She says her art is inspired by her Tlingit heritage.
Using the traditional materials and using it in a modern way feels like I'm honoring my ancestors, but I'm also modernizing some of the ideas that people have attached to traditional materials.
She tries to only use materials from donations or thrift stores.
It's something that our ancestors would do, is they'd use what is near us, and so I felt like that was a good way to honor them.
And next, she says she wants to explore new ways to pass on her skills to the next generation. In Anchorage, I'm Cadence Cedars.
And on this day in 2019, Stanford University's Sarah House was renamed after Carolyn Lewis Atneve, a member of the Delaware tribe. She was a globally recognized scholar and psychologist who was seen as a major figure in creating the field of Native American mental health. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
Portland's Cinco de Mayo Fiesta starts this Friday at Tom McCall Waterfront Park, running through Monday. This comes as other cultural events around the state, including Cinco de Mayo and Juneteenth celebrations, have been canceled because of safety fears. KBOO's Lexis Ponce reports.
Portland Cinco de Mayo Fiesta to proceed in Portland this weekend amid other cultural events in Oregon being canceled due to safety concerns. I spoke to Brandon Treadway, the event director of the Cinco de Mayo Fiesta, on what the fiesta has in store for Portland and the safety measures they're taking.
So the fiesta is bringing 4 days of delicious food, performances, artists and vendors, and entertainment for the whole family. And the event is from Friday through Monday, Friday through Sunday from 11 to 11, and Monday from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m.
And what are the pricing tiers and where can people purchase tickets?
So pricing is definitely cheaper when you purchase tickets online at the Cinco de Mayo Fiesta website, cincodemayoportland.com. Tickets right now start at $16 for adults and I believe $12 for children. That price does, like I said, go up a little bit when you buy at the door, but if you prefer to buy at the door, you're more than able to.
Who should come to this event and what can folks expect?
So there, the event is geared towards all ages. We always like to say that during the daytime, it's definitely family-friendly, senior-friendly as well. We have a mariachi mass on Sunday, which is great for the entire family. And then it definitely turns into a little bit more of a party atmosphere, of course, towards the evening hours when we have our headline bands come on stage. But really, there's something for everyone to do. The Plaza de Niños kids activity area is great for children as young as 3 and 4 years old up to 12 and 13. And then we've, of course, got the full side of the carnival area, too, with rides, games, and more fun over there for kids. This year, what's new is the Lucha Libre wrestling, which is included in your ticket. That's one good thing to note, too, that once you buy your ticket, it includes access to all the entertainment areas, the main stage and everything. Carnival rides are, of course, separate, but it does include access to watch Lucha Libre, which is on Saturday and Sunday. That's taking place every hour between 12 and 8 p.m. And then we're also excited to have the Rip City Boxing Tournament come back, which is a youth amateur boxing tournament that'll be here as well on Saturday and Sunday. Aside from that, in the Plaza de Niños, we've got tons and tons of great food vendors, including some vegan Mexican food vendors we're really excited about, and tons more on the main stage, too.
Will there be any fundraisers that the fiesta is helping towards?
Yeah, so the event actually it benefits the Portland Guadalajara Sister City Association, PGSCA for short. So they started the event. It's going on nearly 40 years. This is its 38th year. And the organization as a whole started around 40 years ago this year. So that the portion of the proceeds does benefit PGSCA and the good that they do with connecting the sister city of Guadalajara, Mexico. But, in addition to obviously supporting PGSCA, there's tons of, up-and-coming entrepreneurs that, come to the event to sell their food, sell their art, and a lot of that contributes towards them being able to open brick-and-mortar shops. So there's a lot of good that comes with the event as well, outside of, obviously, the fundraising aspect, too, for PGSCA.
Was there any obstacles that almost prevented the fiesta from happening this year?
There's always obstacles, unfortunately, some better than none. There's a lot of fear, of course, related to immigration things and things of that nature. That's a fear that, is existent in everyday life for many of the people that come to the event. It's not just event specific. That's obviously the biggest one this year. And, we do our best and we're continuing to do our best to make sure that the event is safe and welcoming for all that attend.
In light of current events, what precautions are you guys taking that will help attendees feel safe coming to this event?
Yeah, so, we work with Portland Police and a variety of other agencies to ensure that we're taking all of the threat-based, precautions as many as possible. Our goal is to make sure that the event stays safe from, fights and things of that nature. That's our first goal. And other than that, we do have, some better security this year, too, more security. We do, bag checks, we do metal detectors, all that kind of stuff to make sure that the event stays safe and welcoming to everyone.
Is there anything we didn't cover that you would like to mention?
Yeah, so we've got our Family Day, which is presented by Toyota, and that actually does include free admission when you enter by 1 p.m. So that includes free admission for children. So that's a good thing to think about. 11 to 1, you can come in on Saturday, and free tickets for children. So that's presented by Toyota.
For KBOO News, this is Lexis Ponce.
KBOO News poet Don Rafael wants more choice than a coin flip.
Is having no alternative the same as fate or preference? Many people voted for Trump because they like the other guy less. Choose while you still can. Apathy is a choice. Frustration is a given. To paraphrase Dylan, there's something going on and you're afraid you know what it is. Thousands of demonstrations the last couple weeks, but no major media covered them. Even executives at 60 Minutes are feeling the subtle leash of their corporate overlord who's waiting for a deal to be approved by Trump. Can his administration be a slow coup and slow chaos at the same time? The future is always changes, but with so many severe changes happening so close together, are we still us? How can things not crumble? So much needs to be done. Every talent, experience, and opinion is needed. This is a flat world, a coin world. We only have two choices. Does Trump continue having green lights, or can millions of stop signs become a red light he'll have no choice but to obey? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 30th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Lexis Ponce, Dan Raphael, Ken Jones. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Yeah. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Eric Galatas, Brian Bull, Edwin J. Vieira, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Sherry Meredith. Thank you for listening to our broadcast. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We're speaking with Laura Grimes from Oregon Arts